Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Luke by Con Riley. Narrated by Cornell Collins. Chapter 1. Luke Lawson started his work week by sharing a secret, crouching beside a sandpit to make his confession.
"I don't want to go back to work in my study."
"Why not?"
little Tor Trelawney asked.
"You're the headmaster of Glen Arbor."
He stretched his small arms wide to encompass the school and its wooded valley.
"Your study has a chair that spins. I've seen it."
He whizzed in a circle.
"You've got a laptop to play on all day, and," he added a deciding factor, "your desk has a drawer full of sad day sweeties."
Luke stifled a smile, wishing he could be 5 years old again instead of more than 6 times older.
"How do you know about my sad day draw, Tor?"
"The Padre told us."
Tor wiggled all of his fingers.
"He said you have 100 Kit Kats."
Luke ruffled corn silk hair.
"Well, maybe not quite 100, but even if I did have that many sweeties, I still wouldn't want to go back to work in my study. That's why I'm down here in your outdoor classroom, using all of my words to say why. It helps when I'm unhappy."
Tor's little face scrunched, worry creasing its grubby surface.
"Unhappy about what?"
Luke held back from mentioning that his ex was due to arrive at any minute. Although ex hadn't ever felt the right label for Nathan. But however Luke defined him, they needed to have a long overdue conversation, drawing a line under the no-string sex they'd fallen into. We had our chance for something serious. He didn't want to take it. Luke settled for a child-safe explanation. He stood, pointing up to his study window. "I'm unhappy because I've got some really hard sums I need to go back up there and finish." Hard sums he'd thought he was done with, his school finally safe from the threat of closure. But that fight continued.
"Adding up big numbers?"
Tor asked, sympathetic. His hand stole into Luke's and squeezed it.
"Charles Apple could help you with them."
His eyes narrowed and he glanced at the glass doors dividing the outdoor and indoor classrooms.
"He's much better at helping than Miss Yates is."
Luke tucked away that information about the latest in a long line of substitute teachers.
"Adding up big numbers isn't my problem today, Tor. Taking away is. Subtraction. Quite a lot of it."
Of money his school badly needed, slashed from his budgets with no warning.
"It's making me frustrated."
He called across to a little girl in the mud kitchen.
"Do you know what frustrated means, Maisie?"
She shook her head. Even with the sandpit between them, Luke saw her eyes were still red from the crying that had drawn him down here. He edged closer, bringing Tor with him, but still giving her space. Luke let his free hand dangle, his turn to wiggle his fingers, not demanding that she hold it, but letting her know that she could if it helped her. Maisie clasped it, her grip tight and clammy, still hot with high emotion. So he lowered his voice and spoke gently.
"Frustrated means getting cross, because I can't make the numbers do what I want."
That described every spreadsheet on his laptop. It had been a blessing to escape them for a few minutes, but it also served as a teaching moment. He gave Maisie more of the vocab that had defined his morning. "I was angry and annoyed, and really aggravated with my hard sums." With himself as well, for letting his thoughts drift towards someone casual who still took up too much of his headspace. He knelt by the sandpit, using a finger to sketch a letter A on its surface. Angry, annoyed, and aggravated. He drew a letter B next to it, emphasizing the sound each time he spoke it. I was bothered. It really bugged me.
It made you cross?
Maisie offered, her voice still thick with tears, wobbling.
Yes, he said gently. Good thinking, Maisie. Cross is a perfect word for how I felt. Cross at having to stretch not enough cash, and even more cross with himself for still holding a torch for Nathan he knew would only burn him. He sounded out the first letter of the word, pausing before starting to sketch it. Should I write what comes after B, or...
I can.
She added a shaky letter C to an alphabet Tor didn't want to be left out of. He bounced from foot to foot.
The numbers made you angry because they were dumb.
Some people might use that word, Tor. Shall I tell you why I try not to?
Tor nodded.
I try not to because dumb is one of those tricky words with two meanings. It could describe a stupid thing that frustrates me, like my hard sums. But some people use it to describe someone who can't speak.
Really?
Tor's whole face scrunched again into a frown.
Why wouldn't someone speak?
His eyes widened.
Oh, they might have a poorly face like the Padre.
He drew a scar from the corner of his eye to his lips.
Perhaps. Or maybe they can't speak because their feelings get in the way and won't let them.
Block their throat so they get stuck there.
Did you know that feelings can do that?
Stop words from coming out even if you want to say them.
I call that being non-verbal, not dumb.
Tor's forehead creased.
Why?
Because calling someone who can't talk the same as a word that means stupid can hurt. Here.
He touched the centre of his chest, poking a spot that had felt increasingly tender the closer it got to Nathan's arrival. He lifted his hand away to point at the letters drawn in the sand.
Luckily, we don't need to say dumb, because there are so many other words to choose from when we're frustrated.
His gaze flicked to Maisie.
We can say them instead of shoving our friends.
Shout them out loud if that helps us to stop pushing them over. He stood, cupped his hands over his mouth, and did just that.
I'm annoyed and bothered and cross and...
He winked at Maisie.
Down in the dumps.
She scraped a D into the sand, and he continued.
I'm so exasperated.
God, was he ever. And not just about an overdue conversation he'd gone to sleep thinking about and had woken up dreading, but because trying to run a school on wishes and prayers instead of cold hard cash was an uphill battle.
You're fed up!
Tor shouted, bouncing.
That's a f, Maisie!
He sobered, his five-year-old face hinting at the man who'd emerge one day.
I was fed up when you pushed me over,
he told his friend, whose eyes welled all over again, her tears spilling.
I'm sorry, Tor.
And there was another clear clue about Tor's future. He hugged her without reservation, squeezing her like he knew she needed her tires pumped, not deflated.
It's okay, he said,
blowing one of her curls out of his face, his nose wrinkling at its tickle.
You're still my best friend. Always will be.
Luke's heart clenched, wishing he and Nathan could turn back time and be friends too. Better than this god-awful limbo that slowly but surely killed him. Being friends like they'd first been at uni would be so much better than all of this one-sided emotion he harboured, had done for years. For so long, he wasn't sure friendship was still an option. He glanced at his watch, aware his work still waited. But helping Maisie manage her feelings was too important to rush away from.
Maisie, he asked, keeping his tone gentle, were you feeling frustrated when you pushed Tor over?
Maisie nodded, her jaw clenched
as if working hard to stop her chin from trembling.
Luke also worked to soften features he knew could be stern and craggy, not wanting to scare her.
Maybe we could find some words together that you could use next time. Wouldn't that be better than pushing away someone you love?
She shrugged, but she clutched Tor's hand. That was enough of an improvement for now, Luke decided. There are words for everything, Maisie, he promised. For every single feeling. He summed up the ethos painted on the classroom fence and the wall of his study.
When you're ready to talk, we'll always listen.
Oh. Maisie hugged him, her arms tight around Luke's neck, the start of a smile emerging once she let go.
Are you ready to go inside now?
That smile fell.
Okay.
He stood, brushing sand from his trousers. How about a little more free play?
Tor cheered, tugging Maisie away, both of them skipping.
Luke watched before crossing to the glass doors and beckoning to the classroom assistant who came over to crack it open.
I think she'll be okay now, Charles, but let them play for a while, will you?
Charles nodded, glitter in his hair sparkling, but his gaze carried worry.
Thanks for coming down. I'm sorry I didn't notice what was brewing. How did you? Because from inside it seemed like they were playing like usual.
I just happened to look out of my window at the right time.
Don't blame yourself for missing it.
You couldn't have seen from inside.
I should have been outside with them, not watching them through the door, but...
His gaze skittered sideways.
Well, I would say I've been busy, but really I've been sharpening pencils all morning.
Is there a problem? Luke asked quietly, remembering Maisie's reluctance to come back inside and Tor's not helpful description. Charles only grimaced, so Luke glanced sideways at the substitute teacher, red pen in hand, slashing through a pile of worksheets. Charles sighed.
Let's catch up later.
Luke checked his watch again and nodded, resigned to heading back to his study to wrestle figures he couldn't make equal to what Glyn Harbour needed, like the salary for a permanent teacher for this classroom. One sharing their play-centered wavelength. Resigned to waiting for Nathan's arrival as well, and for a no-more-sex conversation that, despite everything he'd just promised, he wasn't sure he'd find the right words for. Before he got to the stairs leading to his study, the bell rang between lessons. Students soon filled the hallways, shoaling together in a tide that Luke let flow past, in no hurry to resume work that had driven him to stare out of his window once already, or to go back to fretting over someone who had flitted in and out of his life for years, showing no sign of ever wanting anything serious with him.
But that's not true, is it?
Luke did his best to ignore a voice reminding him of when they'd first got together, told himself that they'd been different people while at uni, much younger ones, and that falling hard and fast for a flatmate was par for the course. Spending every minute together had fueled a first love fire that had burned itself out fast. Only it hadn't burned out, had it? Nathan had frozen him out with no warning, dropped him cold as if Luke had imagined the strength of their connection. Anyone smart wouldn't have slept with him again, even if there had been years between that first breakup and the occasional hookups they'd fallen into. Letting Nathan back into his bed had been, a word from earlier hovered, dumb, a perfect descriptor this time for Luke repeating actions and expecting the result to be different. He also told himself to get a grip as students passed him. Nathan would arrive whether or not Luke regretted the last year or so of their unspoken arrangement. He'd turn up with only a backpack to signal a short visit, stay the night to catch up with their other uni flatmate, put in a midnight appearance at Luke's cottage, and then disappear again as soon as the career talk he'd promised to give was over. That disappear again part shouldn't make Luke's heart ache. He returned students' cheery greetings, oblivious that he rubbed his chest until something further along the hallway caught his eye.
his hand still mid-rub, heartache forgotten, because another student stood alone like Maisie had earlier. An island that other children swept past without stopping. Luke set his own angst aside and got back to doing what he'd trained for before battling spreadsheets had started to suck up all his time. "Hello, Cameron." He stopped a few paces away rather than backing one of his more skittish students into a corner. Luke focused on a nearby notice board. Rather than make eye contact, Cameron might feel forced to return. At least his greeting was reciprocated. Even a grunted hello was better than the bad attitude or silence he would have given Luke last year. "I was hoping to see you," Luke told him. "Wanted to say good luck for the art festival tomorrow. Remind me, when are you and the rest of your class back?"
"Thursday, sir."
"So today's your chance to cram in some career talks before you go. I bet someone like you has already signed up for plenty." In the periphery of his vision, he saw Cameron straighten, tall enough that their eyes would be level despite him not yet turning 16. "Someone like me?" Cameron asked, his voice so much lower than even a few months earlier.
"Yes."
Luke trailed a fingertip down a list of that week's visiting speakers, still not looking at him. "Someone with your talent must have questions for industry professionals." "But there aren't any artists on the list of speakers, sir, and that's all I want to do when I leave school. Paint. But nothing commercial or boring." Luke counted Cameron shuffling closer as another small win. A reason to be full of thanks instead of dread, no matter what waited upstairs for him on his laptop. Cameron engaging in conversation made up for that in spadefuls. Luke built on that foundation, layering on more praise for him to consider. "I'm sure that someone creative could find useful nuggets in each talk. You're a good listener."
"Don't know about that."
"I do," Luke promised. "You proved it during our street art contest before Christmas, remember, when you helped the younger students? They shared their worries with you. I saw them do it and feel better." Cameron shrugged but took another small step closer. "I just did what Uncle Sol does in his art lessons. The younger kids worried about not being good enough. They didn't have to be good to have fun," Cameron said gruffly, "and everyone has to start somewhere." "I think that's what makes this week's career talk so interesting," Luke said, dangling a carrot. "Finding out why people started down their career path, I mean, or why they changed direction."
"But that's just it," Cameron admitted. "I don't want to change direction."
He pointed to a few of the listed speakers. "Like these, I'm never going to be a nurse or sailor," he snorted, pointing at another talk that Luke's finger had skipped over. "And I can't see many jobs coming up for me in refugee camps." A voice from behind them said, "That's where you'd be missing a real opportunity." Hugo, the school's padre, pointed at the name Luke had avoided touching. He tapped it a few times. "I happen to know that my friend Nathan Ridd often works alongside art therapists who help displaced children. He's got so many interesting stories and contacts. You'd like him. Everyone does." Luke snorted, couldn't help it. Not when none of Nathan's stories had ever led to a happy ending for him. He rubbed his chest again, only sure of one thing. That instinctive snort was why he had to set down that torch he'd carried alone for more years than made sense. Hugo's opinion must have differed. His kind gaze met with Cameron's before finding Luke's and softening in a way that should have set alarm bells ringing. "I know Nathan wants to share more." Why did that comment feel aimed solely at him? Luke took a step back to avoid it. Hugo blocked his escape, no evading his next question either. "Shall we all go to Nathan's talk together?" Before Luke could decline, Hugo sprung the trap he'd baited. "Oh no, it clashes with another on my schedule. Cameron, you'll hold a seat for the headmaster, won't you?" His gaze switched back to Luke once Cameron nodded, his eyes twinkling. "Perfect. He'll love to see you." Hugo left with Cameron, Luke watching them head into a classroom while mentally backtracking. Go to Nathan's talk to hear about how he was allergic to commitment? that he felt safer around war zones than around Luke long term. Luke didn't need to hear it. He'd already lived that story. He ordered his soft heart to harden on the way up to his study, stood by the mirror once the door closed behind him, telling his insides to match his outside for once, stern instead of squishy. Then he switched on his laptop, because Nathan arriving or not, his real work still waited. A framed picture next to it of a knight in tarnished armour reminded him to get ready for battle as his laptop booted. Like he'd guessed, email after email had arrived from the Supernus group who owned his school and many others, demanding he make savings. He'd run out of ways to make them happen. No more corners left to cut here. A car arriving saved him from replying. Luke's hands stilled over his laptop keyboard. Budget cuts forgotten. His heart a complete traitor. Far from hardened like he'd ordered, it tripped almost as fast as Luke did over his feet to get to the window. He took in long legs in faded jeans first as Nathan emerged from a taxi, followed by broad shoulders in a desert camo t-shirt and a glimpse of his face. But the sight of short brown hair instead of the shoulder length he'd expected almost provoked a whimper. Who hasn't worn his hair that short since uni? Luke's heart continued its rebellion, beating loud enough that he drew back from the glass as if Nathan might hear it pounding. He inched back just as quickly, watching Nathan pay the driver and then crouched to dig in his usual backpack that spelled a short stay. The driver hefting a large suitcase out of the boot surprised him. Luke stared at it, then at Nathan again, soaking up the sight of him facing the school building, his phone pressed to his ear. His smile was as brilliant as ever, the very best thing in the world to wake up to, the worst thing to remember. The urge to go down to greet him was almost irresistible. Luke couldn't, wouldn't, refused to hang on to feelings that weren't reciprocated outside of the bedroom. Feelings that had never been shared by someone with Nathan's version of avoidance. Luke knew that. Could reach over to his bookcase and find similar textbook cases. So that's why I have to avoid being alone with him this time. Below his open window, Nathan slid his phone away, then raised a hand, his smile widening. Luke craned his neck to see who he waved at, helpless not to. Hugo. Nathan ran to meet him, his embrace making Hugo stagger. The same soul-deep laughter that used to fill their shared flat at uni rising to Luke's window. Despite his mixed feelings, a smile touched Luke's lips because Hugo had always been the link between them, their glue, the one man Nathan always stuck to. See, he does know how to run towards someone he loves. It's only me he runs away from. That smile slipped and Luke made himself turn away, forced himself to sit at his desk. Ordered himself to get on with the management of a school that deserved all of his threadbare focus. Nathan laughed again outside and Luke shot out of his seat, only not to stare like a teenager in love this time. He yanked the window closed instead, the sound attracting the attention of both men below it. Hugo waved up at him, beckoned, said, "Join us," without words. But all Luke took in was the shift in Nathan's expression, from bright to somehow burning, smouldering, sparks flying once he saw who the window framed above him. Their eyes met, catching like magnets, the connection instant, irresistible, and something crossed Nathan's face that Luke might have labelled as relief, would have if not for Nathan always putting distance between them. Luke backed away as though those sparks might singe him. Then he got back to work, scrutinizing the figures on his laptop, not seeing a single number while picturing that ABC of emotion words he'd drawn in the sandpit for Maisie. Finding the right ones to tell Nathan their no-strings days were over really wouldn't be half so easy. Chapter 2. Luke still hadn't found the right words when footsteps sounded outside his study a half hour later. He froze, breathing again when a hesitant knock landed. Solomon. Cameron's uncle was the only adult here who approached Luke's study the same way as a student in trouble. His hesitation gave him away as surely as if he'd flung open the door to yell he was an impostor instead of a gifted teacher. He was closer to believing that wasn't true now than he had been last year, Luke hoped, glad of the distraction. Luke, Solomon asked, cracking the door open, sorry to disturb you. At least the use of his first name was progress. Another sign of Solomon relaxing into the teaching team instead of hanging back on its outskirts like his nephew had downstairs. But hadn't Cameron also blossomed lately? Risen to every challenge that Luke had set him, surpassing expectations, despite the poor reports other schools had given. That kind of turnaround was why his school was worth sticking up for, was more than worth going into battle for each week with the penny pincher from the Supernus group in charge of his budget. Fuck their business model. Teachers and students like his deserved so much better. Come in. Luke shut his laptop on yet another snippy email signed by someone whose last name was Russell. Luke pictured them as a small dog, yapping. And you're not disturbing me. He tapped the closed laptop lid. I'd much rather talk to you than deal with my inbox. Solomon stepped inside. I don't need to take up much time. Just got a question and a message. Go on. Firstly, can I have the fuel card? Got enough diesel in the minibus to get us to the festival, but not back again on Thursday. Here. Luke dug out his wallet, passing a card over. This isn't the right one. Solomon tried to give it back. This is your credit card. Take it, it's fine. Luke pushed on rather than explain that the school's fuel card was maxed out. What was the second thing? Charles wants to see you ASAP. There was something else too. It's not important, but... He backed into the hallway and Luke got up to follow, noticing another hesitation as the study door closed, a sign that Solomon was building up to something. The gust of an exhale confirmed it, a signal Luke had learned to listen for around someone who'd only started to come out of his shell with careful handling. And with patience. For a moment they stood in the quiet of the hallway of a school that was Luke's pride and joy, his home, and sometimes his cross to carry. But he could have been somewhere else entirely, breathing in fresh sea air next to his foster father, 9 years old all over again, and learning that catching slippery fish took time. How often had Luke knelt beside a man who'd been the last in a long line of stand-in parents, knee-deep in one of Porth Perrin's rock pools, and waited to catch fish with him. That patience hadn't only helped forge a bond between them. It had rebuilt trust that had been shattered, teaching him that, like with Maisie earlier, waiting until Solomon was ready to talk was more important than rushing. And like all of those other long waits, this one came with a payoff. But everyone else here calls me Sol. You could too if you wanted. Oh. Luke had to swallow around a surprise lump in his throat. He couldn't do anything about the smile that followed. No way to repress it. Thank you, Sol. I will. Sol nodded before leaving, the moment over. But Luke carried it with him along a hallway lined with trophy cabinets, feeling as if he'd just won a prize of his own. It buoyed him, counteracting the dead weight of all those cut-your-costs emails as he passed classrooms. Each room held special guests today, would all week long. Professionals who'd share their career path stories like he'd described to Cameron. He glimpsed one on the way to the staircase. A silver-haired sea captain had the whole class tying knots and laughing. More laughter boomed from another, a special nurse showing that some of the best careers involved caring. That laughter followed him downstairs, fainter as he descended. But it was a sound that prompted his second smile in as many minutes, which faded when he exited the building and caught sight of Charles waiting for him. He hadn't been happy earlier. Now he was even further from it. Luke picked up his pace, jogging the last few steps to meet him,
about to ask what had happened, only to have Charles beat him to it.
"I'm sorry, Luke, I didn't want to say anything while you were busy with Tor and Macy, but this isn't..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?